Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, accepting nominations now for the 2021 James Irvine Leadership Awards at irvine.org. The California Endowment. Health happens when Californians value schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendowed.org. And by the California Healthcare Foundation, standing with all Californians as we address the coronavirus emergency together, on the web at chcf.org.
From Valley Public Radio, you're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock, hosting today's show from my home. Like so many other public radio stations in California and across the country, we've gone remote, and we hope you'll bear with us. The coronavirus has upended all of our lives, especially those on the front lines, from healthcare workers to those trying to assist vulnerable populations. Today, I'm speaking with four guests about the work they're doing to prepare for the spread of COVID-19. Joining me by phone is Lori Wilson, Executive Director of the American Red Cross Central California Region, Pao Yang, CEO of the Fresno Center, Tammy Weicker Atkins, Public Information Officer for Tulare County Health and Human Services, and Karen Palinelli, CEO of Madera Community Hospital. Karen, I'd like to start with you. We're hearing reports from doctors and nurses in Fresno throughout the valley that anxiety levels are at an all-time high. So what can administrators do to manage this, especially as they're also under huge duress?
Hi, yes, thank you. What we're doing here at Madera Community Hospital, first of all, me as a CEO, is I'm trying to be very transparent and very open and have open communication with our team. Every day before I leave work, no matter what time it is, or if it is when I get home at night, 10 or 11 or 12 midnight, I'm sending out a daily email to all of our teams, letting them know what's going on here in our hospital, in our community, with the hospital association, with the public health department, and just updating them on, you know, any positive cases that have came in, of course, just numbers only, and you know, I think, and then giving them an ability to also reach back out to us to ask questions. One of the other things is that our chief nursing officer and myself, we're rounding every day. We're trying to come in on the night shift, the day shift, and whenever we can, we're rounding in the departments and we're talking to our healthcare workers and we're listening to their fears, their needs, their anxieties. You know, we've tried to make resources available to those nurses and those doctors. And, you know, I think one of the things that we hear a lot about is that, you know, when you watch the TV and you look at the news media stations, their anxiety levels get a little higher because in some areas, you know, it's very much, you know, they're seeing very much more COVID patients than we are here right now in the Central Valley. And it's just really scary not knowing what's to come. But it's also very scary for the people on the front lines about PPE. Is there a potential that we could run out of, you know, PPE is a personal protective equipment. And is there a possibility? We know that's definitely a possibility that might happen in the future. And so that makes it very frightening to our nursing staff. And then, you know, reassuring them that we're doing everything we can here at Madera Community Hospital to make sure that we are preserving our PPE and that, you know, we are looking at other ways to protect ourselves if we don't have PPE and working, you know, with the California Hospital Association, working with our public health department, working with our local partners here in the Central Valley at other hospitals, making sure that we all kind of keep a pulse on what's going on. We have a, you know, we look at our daily PPE volumes, PAR levels, each and every day to see how much are we using, you know, when are we going to project to run out, and then reaching out to our community partners. And we've had so many of our community partners reach out to us offering their PPE that they have, whether it's the ag industry, whether it's one of our local colleges or high schools, and then people in our community. I had one of my neighbors knocked on my door and said, you know, we want to make masks for your hospital. And they're already making homemade masks for the just in case we run out of PPE. So I think, you know, talking to all of our staff and letting them know all these things are happening and people are here to support us and our hospital is prepared to continue to try to, you know, secure as much PPE for our staff as possible, working on a conservation plan and what do we do if we do run out and how do we, you know, protect our staff with other measures. So I think that gives them a lot of reassurance. But I will say it is a scary time for healthcare workers, no doubt.
Absolutely. I mean, there was just a New York Times article where a Fresno surgeon who asked to remain anonymous said that it was like being at war with no ammo. It's a very scary time. I'd like to turn the conversation over to Tammy with Tulare County Health and Human Services. Given that we don't know when COVID-19 is going to peak in the Valley, or how many people the virus is going to affect, how does the county prepare to deal with the crisis?
Yes, absolutely. The county does see this as an expanding incident. And for this reason, Tulare County has opened our Department Operations Center, which operates out of Health and Human Services, the public health branch. And that coincides with our public health emergency plan. As the incident expands, we have the ability to leverage our emergency operations center at the county level, and we have the ability to pull in resources through our region, statewide, and federal resources as well.
Great, thank you. Glory Wilson, you're with the American Red Cross. Tell us about the efforts of the Red Cross in response to COVID-19.
Hi. So our response is to continue to do what it is we are focused on doing our day-to-day. We have to be able to continue to support our community in the day-to-day disasters, the home fires, be ready for any of our natural disasters. You know, we're approaching wildfire season. We have flooding potential with the rain that we've been getting. Even though we've been getting a lot of rain, you would still think that we wouldn't have to worry about wildfires, but we do because the rain level is so low. We're expecting a heavy season. So we are having to prepare and adjust and figure out how we're going to deliver the emergency response service that we do in a manner that is safe for our volunteer workforce and that is also safe for those whom we're serving. So, you know, we are responding to the fires. We had three in the valley here over this last weekend. And so our volunteers, they continue to provide the compassionate care. It just looks a little different. We aren't able to actually put our arms around the clients like we would in the past and be able to hug them and say that, you know, we'll get you through this. We'll get through this together. They have to do it differently. They have to provide that compassionate care and that assistance and that financial assistance that we do in a different manner, more of an arm's length, safe social distancing, or in some cases, over the phone. But it is still being done, and it's still being done with the same commitment and compassion and passion for service that they have always done. It's just looking different.
And what is the supply situation for your volunteers? Are you facing the same kind of concerns that hospitals are, in terms of access to things like hand sanitizers or the things that you need to protect your volunteers?
Not at this stage. We try and make sure the Red Cross is always talking about being prepared, right? So one of the things that we always try and make sure we have in our arsenal and in our storage and in our resources is those exact sort of resources. We are working with our vendors to make sure that we will have what we need should that time come. Hopefully it does not. And hopefully, hopefully COVID-19 is the only disaster we have to worry about in our community. We don't want two concurrent disasters. But in the case that it isn't, we are definitely in touch with our vendors to make sure we will have the supplies that we need to have.
Great. So, Pal Gang, I'd like to hear from you about some of the strategies you're using to make sure that residents stay safe. My guess is that communication can sometimes be difficult, especially for non-English speaking residents who may not have access to lots of news outlets or perhaps are not as digitally connected. How do you keep those communities informed?
Yeah, here at the Fresno Center, it's a very unique situation for us because we also run a mental health clinic here. And we have a holistic culture education wellness center where we serve over 3,000 clients per month. So right now, we're not able to serve that number. 90% of our staff are working from home or telecommuting. We're talking to clients over the phone, providing therapy over the phone. For severe cases, we get them to come in, do one-on-one, and we practice the distancing here as well. But we're utilizing a lot of the ethnic media. Of the 3,000-plus clients that we serve per month, 60% are Spanish-speaking, and the other 30% are Southeast Asian languages. So we try to partner with our folks here or other organizations here in terms of translating information into Spanish, Hmong, Lao, and Khmer, so that we can distribute these among the community. At the same time, we're utilizing the Hmong TV, we're utilizing Hmong radio to go on there with credible folks. Last week, we were there on Hmong TV for an hour. We had Dr. Dylan, who's working and supporting the Fresno County Health and Human Services Department. She's from UCSF, and she went with us on TV. We were able to get a couple Hmong medical doctors to go on TV. We want to make sure that we get folks who are culturally and content and as well as linguistically competent so that we can give them the right information and make sure that the sources is from a credible source. Because the last thing we want to do is create panic and fear. And keep in mind that 60,000 of the Southeast Asian that lives in the Central Valley here are from Southeast Asia, obviously, and the majority of them are from the Vietnam War era. So these folks are traumatized. They're scared. A lot of the elders don't read, write, and speak English well. So they're getting a lot of mixed messages, sometimes from folks who are not content competent. So that's creating that fear. So we're going in there. We want to make sure that we can help them understand what's going on. When we talk about an illness, a virus, they're guessing, what is that? If it's a sickness, why are people closing stores? Why? They're seeing all of that in the media. So they're scared. And they're used to the war in Vietnam where people are buying stuff. People are running. People are closing their doors, and they're getting ready for a war. You know, and they hear news from our president about, you know, the enemy is a ghost. So a lot of these folks that are very religious and very spiritual, when they hear that, they panic and then go, oh, my God, our life is going to be over. What do we do? So our job here at the Fresno Center is really trying to calm that, trying to educate them with what our federal, state, and local officials are doing and passing that information on.
Great. Thank you. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Joe Moore, President and General Manager of Valley Public Radio. The coronavirus crisis has disrupted all of our lives, including here at FM 89. We're working hard to bring you reliable, up-to-date information about COVID-19 because that's our commitment to you, in good times and in bad. At the same time, we're dealing with our own challenges, including operating the station with virtually all of our staff working from home and big interruptions in our cash flow. We've been forced to postpone both our spring fund drive and our annual wine tasting event, which is the station's largest annual fundraiser. We're committed to paying our bills and to paying our employees, who are working so hard under difficult circumstances. If you can help the station by making a gift, please log on to kvpr.org today and click the donate button. Every gift matters and will help us get through this crisis and continue to serve our community.
You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. We are talking today about COVID-19 preparedness in the Valley. One of our panelists here today is Tammy Weicker-Atkins, Public Information Officer for Tulare County Health and Human Services Agency. Tammy, the number of cases in Tulare is comparable to Fresno and Kern counties, but Tulare doesn't have those large dense population centers that seem to be the places where COVID-19 is spreading the fastest. So did this surprise you? Did the spread of the virus in Tulare County surprise you?
No, actually, we were quite prepared here at Tulare County HHSA, and that is because in early February, we had an enormous event called the World Ag Expo that happens yearly in Tulare County, brings in thousands of visitors from surrounding areas in California, all over the United States, and from overseas. So we have been communicating to our community and to travelers about the COVID-19 virus heavily since that event in early February. So we asked people who have traveled outside of the county to call us when they got back in so that we could assist them with any next step that they might need to take. And we have found that our community really took that message to heart. We had people that called us, even they went on a cruise that wasn't a part of the Princess cruise. They went to Europe in some cases. And out of all of our positive cases, we have 15 that were travel cases. So that's the majority of our positive cases in the county. So our community really responded to that information that gave them, I think, power to make those decisions to go ahead and call us at the public health department and ask us, I went to this place. Do I need to self-quarantine? What are the next steps that I need to do?
Great. Karen Palinelli, you're with Madera Community Hospital. I'd like to talk to you about testing. So many people seem to be upset that they can't get tests, that the turnaround time to get results of the test is really delayed. Do you see any change in that situation in the next week or two?
Well, I'm really hopeful that there will be a change in that, and I think it's frustrating for us as well here at Madera Community Hospital, and especially with our medical staff. That's one of our biggest frustrations that we have right now is that we're not able to even test all the people that at one time we weren't able to test all the people that we would like to test. And that's because there was a limitation of the testing materials to do the test and also the test themselves. I do see that changing, being in contact with our public health at Madera. They say that they have some testing capabilities here in the future that we might be able to test more people internally. And we also have an ability that we might be able to test here at our own hospital, we're hoping real soon. The only holdup for the public health department and our hospital to do these tests ourselves is that there's cartridges that go in these certain machines that we both have, but there's a shortage of the cartridges. And so even though now they make these cartridges to make it available so we could do this testing, the cartridges are so now needed at all different hospitals and public health departments that there's a shortage of those. So we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed that, they're going to be able to produce more of those. We've been following the public health guidelines on testing, and so that limits how many people that we can test. And, they have some criteria that they've built, that they're using, and we're trying to follow that criteria. If we do test at our Madera Public Health Department and we send it to them, they don't actually do the testing. We actually do the collection here. We send it to them, and they send it up to a government lab that gets tested at. And it takes about a turnaround time of about 48 hours. So if we have somebody that's very high risk, that's the route that we try to take. But Quest and LabCorp have had some testing availability. Now, they don't always have the availability as well. Right now, we're able to go through Quest, but we're not able to go through LabCorp because they don't have testing kits. And if we do send somebody to Quest, it's taking anywhere from 4 to 7 days to get those results back. So those are the ones that we send that are maybe, not as high risk or doesn't meet those high risk categories. So, we're feeling a little bit better that we do have a private lab that we can send testing to, as well as our public health department. But it'll be really great if we can test more people. And it is frustrating for our patients, our communities. We were fielding like 100 calls a day when this outbreak broke out, and we still get tons of calls each day asking us about testing. And people are frustrated that they can't go and just get their test. We did develop a drive-through mechanism to collect the specimen here at Madera Community Hospital. But again, it's not just open to the public that anybody can come and test that doesn't have symptoms. it is really limited to those people that have exposure to a COVID patient or somebody that's traveled in a high-risk area or out of the country or running fever, chills, and shortness of breath. And so, you know, we're trying to follow those guidelines from the public health department and testing those people. If we have a degree of high suspicion, then, you know, we may test, but it would go through the, you know, we may be able to test, but not through the public health department because they make us follow those guidelines. We'd have to go through the private lab. And so just so we can conserve those testing kits. You know, we have changed, those requirements change, you know, almost every day. We are adding healthcare workers because we know healthcare workers are at risk, and so we're trying to make them a priority as well. Doctors, nurses, anybody that's you know, on the front lines taking care of people. If there's a potential exposure, we're putting them, you know, as a high priority as well. So we're hoping that it does, you know. And from what I hear, talking to the California Hospital Association, the Hospital Council, CDPH, listening to our president, our governor, they keep telling us more test kits are coming. So we do think that it's going to improve.
And can you give us a sense of how many calls a day you're getting from people who want to be tested?
You know, we were getting a lot of panic calls, up to like 100 a day. I mean, it's hard to track because we have so many entry points at our hospital. So our operator, our emergency department, you know, our clinics in Chowchilla. So we were just, you know, people will just call and they're just, you know, they're a little bit panicked, especially when we had our first case here in the Central Valley and it was in Madera. That's when we really had an influx of calls. You know, we've been publishing a lot of stuff on our Facebook page about, you know, the testing, what the requirements are. And so, you know, and the public health department in Madera has a lot of stuff on their website as well. We post stuff on our website so we can do more education. We also are giving education out at our visits here, both in our ER and in our clinic, so people understand, you know, what they need to do and when to come in if they have symptoms. And so I think just doing those educations, we have some FAQs set out from the health department that we've, you know, put in all of our areas, so when people come in the different areas or phone calls come in, that, you know, our employees know what kinds of answers to give those community members or those potential patients or potential COVID patients.
Yeah. And Tammy, what's the situation in Tulare County? What kind of, how many people approximately are contacting, hoping to get tested? What's the demand?
I can tell you that as of this morning at 8 a.m., our lab has tested 520 total patients. 395 of those are from Tulare County, and 125 are those from other surrounding counties. So we have a high volume of individuals in Tulare County who are calling and asking to be tested. So we definitely mirror that.
Great. So, Lori, I'd like to shift the conversation a little bit and talk about blood collection, which is always something that is critical, really any time of the year, but particularly during disasters. You know, I understand that while you don't collect blood in this region, American Red Cross, mm-hmm. as an organization, does collect a great deal of blood in other parts of mm-hmm. the country. So I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are about giving blood at this time. You know, we're under directives to stay home as much as possible, mm-hmm. and routine medical appointments are being canceled. So is it safe to give blood right now?
So thank you for asking and for, you know, making it clear that while we are not the agency in the Central Valley that is the predominant, that collects the predominant amount of blood, you know, we do have a few pockets in the Central California region where we have, where we will hold blood drives and so on. But for the most part, it is other blood banks such as the Central California Blood Bank. But we are, you know, we do supply 40% of the nation's blood supply, 2,500 hospitals across the country. So when we see situations like this, we are definitely, we know we're going to have a drop in the amount of blood that gets donated. And this is definitely an unprecedented situation, one that we've really never encountered. And we have definitely seen cancellations across the country to the loss of about 250,000 pints of blood as of the 24th of March. that is a significant amount. We know that if we're seeing it, other blood banks across the country are probably seeing that as well. So we want to encourage people to give blood. We are an essential service. So, yes, we do talk about social distancing, but even the U.S. Surgeon General pointed out that, you know, we can be social distant, but we don't want to be socially disengaged. Blood is not one of those things that we can open up a new factory and manufacture. We can't change a distillery and change it over from making vodka to having the ability to make more hand sanitizer. We don't have that ability to do with blood. The only way to make sure that the shelves in our hospitals are full for our patients who have to have emergency surgeries, who have to have our cancer patients, for our people who need blood transfusions for other health issues, the only way to make sure that we have blood on the shelves is by donating it from a human being. So it is definitely an essential service. Yeah, I would encourage you, if you are concerned with the local blood center, whatever one that is that's closest to you, call them. See if you can get an appointment so that you can minimize the amount of time you're there. Ask them what their protocols are for ensuring safety of the people who are coming in, as well as their staff. They have a vested interest, of course, just like we do. I would encourage people to remember that while we do want to practice social distancing and we do need to be aware, blood is an essential service. If without it, people die. So we want to encourage people to consider, if they are healthy and eligible, donating blood. If they have concerns, you know, follow the guidance of the local health, you know, public health services. But remember that it is something that we can't just open more factories or change factories over. If we don't have blood on the shelves, you know, we are trying to avoid having another emergency from the emergency. So that is why we are continuing that message of blood is essential. And it is, what we do know is that blood does, this virus is respiratory. It's not transferable via blood. So, that is, if that helps reassure people,
yeah,
that it is a safe thing to do.
Great. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute.
Community is at the heart of everything we do at Valley Public Radio. From the young artist up the street to the crisis two cities over, the heartwarming stories, the heartbreaking situations, Public Radio brings it all directly to you. Please consider supporting FM 89 as a sustaining member today. Donate at kvpr.org or on the KVPR app. Thanks.
You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Today we are talking about COVID-19 and how agencies, hospitals, nonprofits are preparing in the Valley to deal with this crisis. I'd like to turn the conversation over to Pao Yang with the Fresno Center. We've seen a lot of news reports about people of Asian descent being victims of assault, victims of hate crimes. And I'm curious what you're hearing and what kind of support you're able to offer.
Yeah, we do get a few calls about that. A lot of it are being shared through social media. So a lot of folks are calling us because their kids show them, fights or incidents that happen. We haven't seen any here in the Central Valley as of yet, but we have a lot of concerned citizens that have called us about it. We do have direct connection with the Fresno PD or the Sheriff's Office, and, we have folks there that are also linguistically competent that can serve our community. But as of now, the concern is there, and we let them know that, you just need to be careful. Be aware of your surrounding. Everybody is fearful of what's going on. No one really has a solution yet, but just treat people the way you want to be treated. But we do have our law enforcement that are there to help us in this situation.
Great. Tammy, I'd like to turn the conversation to you. What do you foresee happening in the next 2 weeks for Tulare County Health and Human Services? What are you gearing up for?
We don't expect this to be a permanent new normal, but we are certainly looking forward to continuing to gear up if we have expanding cases and working with our partners and continuing to ensure that we have open communication lines with our community and addressing concerns that they have as well. We have a wonderful and very diverse community, so we need to use all of our pathways and our deep partnerships with our healthcare providers, nonprofits, faith-based organizations, our business community, and our partners from the Thule tribe to ensure that community members feel like they are empowered with enough information to not panic or have major anxiety about what's going on.
And can you speak specifically about farm workers and how information is getting to them?
So we have multiple and varied avenues that we are able to have that open pathway, not only through our social media and website, which we have translated everything into Spanish, but as well through our benefit service clinics, other programs, and partnerships throughout the community. We have one local partner in the community, which I'd like to recognize specifically, Lale Moeno. We have, for many years, hosted the Farmworker Women's Conference with her, in concert with her, and she's incredible. Her organization is wonderful. They have a close touch on the farmworker community, and so we often funnel information through her and gain information from her about our farmworker community.
Yeah, the partnerships, I think, I would imagine at a moment like this are just so very, very valuable.
They're so key, yes.
Karen, I'd like to talk to you or hear from you about your thoughts around preparedness. You know, as the CEO of Madera Community Hospital, I'm sure your focus right now is on the short term, you know, what to expect in the next weeks and then months. But what are your thoughts about the long term and how this experience might shape how the medical system prepares for these kinds of large scale events?
Yes, well, it's... you know, of course, we're preparing to expand our bed capacity, ventilator capacity, ICU capacity. But what I would say is after all this is all said and done, when we can all sit down together and really look and learn lessons from, you know, what worked, what didn't work, you know, we haven't seen a pandemic like this, you know, in any of our lifetimes, I don't believe. And, you know, there's not really a playbook, but, you know, what we're doing here is developing our playbook, making sure that, you know, that we are, you know, it is a fluid playbook, and it's our COVID playbook, and we're making sure that, you know, whatever, you know, faces us each day in our command center, we are making adjustments to that playbook to make sure that we can get that information out to all of our staff, but we'll be able to have that playbook for the future, and then we can go through that to see is there a way that we could have better did things, because, you know, as you do it day to day and things change so quickly here with this COVID pandemic, we learn as we go, and every day, you know, we're on calls with CDPH and CDC and, you know, the Hospital Association and our public health department, and we're all, you know, trying to streamline information together because this is, again, something new that none of us have been through before. But what I want to really say is that, you know, where I see that we can really improve and that we need to absolutely for sure be more prepared. That's with our healthcare workers, our doctors and our nurses that are on the front line working at the bedside with these patients. We know that our biggest struggle right now is that are we going to have enough staff to take care of these people, and them, you know, all the risks that are involved just daily taking care of patients without COVID, and now we have this you know, this virus that so many things are unknown about, and you know, I just think that we have to prepare more. You know, we had a nursing shortage before this COVID pandemic, and a physician shortage, especially in the Central Valley.
Right.
And so it really hits us hard here in the Valley. And so what I would say is when we look back is that, you know, we need to be prepared for this in the future. We need to have more nursing programs. I know we're expanding medical education. We need to continue to focus on that, because without these warriors, these amazing people willing to come to work every day, because, you know, they could just stay home, right, and take care of all the people that need us. I mean, I tell you, you know, they're so valuable. And I, And I think, you know, I want to say how much, you know, for me as a CEO, I appreciate our teams and all the teams in every, you know, organization throughout the world, the United States, of these nurses and doctors doing whatever they can do to help us keep safe here in our communities and in our hospitals.
Yeah. Pao Yang, you know, you mentioned that you're not able to offer counseling services in person anymore, and have transitioned to talking to folks over the phone. Depression and isolation are really hard to combat from a distance. So what tips are you giving residents?
Yeah, we're not able to do face-to-face as often. We still have clinicians that are still here. We're open. We're not closed yet. Just that majority of our staff are working from home, connecting with the clients over the phone. Depression is something that, you know, a lot of our community don't understand. That's why we have our mental health program, is to educate them about that. So we have our clinician and counselor still calls and do make their rounds every day, following up with our clients to make sure they're okay. A lot of our clients don't really understand or can't really navigate some of the resources that are out there. The hardest thing is, you know, we used to go pick them up and bring them here to the center, and we service them. And now that service is gone. So it is a challenge, you know, to utilize the technology to talk to them. We're trying to educate them how to FaceTime. We're trying to do what we could so that we can help them during this difficult time. I just wanted to piggyback off of Karen. Karen, my wife works at Madera Community Hospital as a nurse there. And I was talking to her about what's going on, especially my family. We're a refugee family, and because of the war in Vietnam, we're here. And a lot of our community folks are feeling like, you know, this is another war that we're fighting. And I also talked to my older brother. He's 72 years old, and he's a major in that war in Vietnam. And as a veteran, he shared with me, and he said, you know, he goes, Pao, you know what? This is like World War III. It's just that the enemy is unknown. And this war is so different than wars that I've fought in before. Before, they used to take men like me. Well, we're not educated. We go and fight these battles. And now men like me who are uneducated can't fight this war. It has to be folks that are educated like you guys. It has to be our nurse and our doctors that are in the front line fighting this war. And if they can't win this war, we're going to be all in trouble. And I believe that, and I see that, and that resonates with me and our community. So the depression is there. The fear is there. So we're trying to educate our community, when we're trying to follow up with them to make sure that they're not afraid at this very dark moment in our war history.
Absolutely. We just have a minute before we have to wrap up, but very quickly, Lori Wilson, people want to know what they can do, especially in times of social distancing. Do you have any advice on how people can help out?
Well, first of all, I got to choke back, because what you just said just was amazing. And first, to thank all the people on the front lines that are doing everything they can. So, how to social distancing, reach out to each other, find new ways, you know, FaceTime, find FaceTime parties, FaceTime movie nights, things that you can do, volunteer where you can. You know, we have, you know, the Red Cross, of course, we have volunteer needs, and some of it's changing and how it looks. You know, it's going to be, you know, we don't know how long remotely, so there's different skill sets that are needed. But I would say, with the social distancing, from what I've seen and experiencing myself, because we all are going through this together, is reaching out to each other, reaching out to your family, finding new ways with your children, having honest conversations while at the same time allowing them to be kids, and finding, you know, new ways for them to connect with their friends, whether it's through having a dance party, you know, get FaceTime dance party, pulling a bunch of people up using whatever social media tools we have at our disposal. Fortunately, we have some tools at our disposal to do that. And then be kind and listen to each other. And if you yourself are struggling, don't be afraid to reach out to a loved one or a friend and just say, I'm struggling with this. I'm scared. My anxiety is getting to me, or, you know, help talk me through this, find reasons to laugh. And then remember again, we're just because we're socially distant, like the U.S. Surgeon General said, doesn't mean we need to be socially disengaged.
Right.
So, you know, don't lock yourself in your house if you can avoid it. Let fresh air in, reach out and connect, using the tools that we have available to us.
Great advice. Thank you so much. And thank you to all the panelists for being with us today. You've been hearing from Lori Wilson, Executive Director of the American Red Cross Central California Region, Pao Yang, CEO of the Fresno Center, Tammy Weicker Atkins, Public Information Officer for Tulare County Health and Human Services, and Karen Palinelli, CEO of Madera Community Hospital. Thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. As you've just heard, people are working tirelessly to slow the spread of COVID-19, and it's affecting all of us in ways we couldn't have anticipated. We've recently asked our listeners for audio postcards about how the pandemic is affecting them. Today, we're going to hear from poet Lee Herrick and writer Lisa Lee Herrick, who sent a voice memo from their home. We also hear from Bakersfield resident Randy Villegas, who's sheltering in place. Clovis resident and Fresno State lecturer Gina Lu Gong starts us off with a voice memo describing the threats and racism many Asian Americans are experiencing right now.
It's been exactly 1 month since I first emailed my daughter's fourth grade teacher and principal to express my concern about a playground incident involving her friend, a Vietnamese-American boy, who was being taunted by some other boys for having, quote, the coronavirus, unquote. At that time, COVID-19 was still largely confined to China, but already there were signs of Asian Americans, like my daughter's friend, being targeted and blamed. Fast forward to today, the pandemic has reached all 50 states. Rather than proactively focusing on solutions, our so-called leader-in-chief insists on reactively pointing the finger of blame, even going to the extent of crossing out the proper term on his speech notes to rename it the, quote, Chinese virus, unquote. Those who continue to use this label are either unable or unwilling to acknowledge the racist intent behind it. Continuing to use this label normalizes fear and mistrust of anyone who looks Asian. We are now in the throes of the latest wave of the yellow peril. Asian Americans everywhere are being subjected to name-calling, bullying, and acts of physical aggression and violence. History should teach us that our fear of foreigners led to angry mobs, race riots, and the driving out of immigrants, especially here in California. From the late 1800s and early 1900s, this fear and suspicion of the Asian other continued through World War II, when 120,000 Japanese Americans, two-thirds of whom were American citizens by birth, were forcibly incarcerated in U.S. concentration camps. And now, in 2020, it's starting again. In Texas, a man and his two young children were slashed across their faces while shopping in a warehouse store. Here in Fresno, a man's car was vandalized with the words, F Asians and coronavirus, spray-painted across it. My own cousin just encountered a man yelling a racial slur at her, telling her to, quote, take your virus back to where you came from, unquote. In these worrisome times, I'm actually grateful to be homebound with my daughter. At least I don't have to worry she'll be victimized by kids repeating hateful rhetoric or worse, subjected to bullying, aggression, or physical attacks. We can't control what Trump says, but we can stand up against the use of racist language. Normalizing racist rhetoric is the first step down a slippery slope. Don't take that step.
My name is Randy Villegas, and I'm currently enjoying my shelter in place here in Bakersfield, California, in Kern County. And though my family, very thankfully, is in good health and good spirits right now, I'm really starting to get worried as we approach the first of the month, and my family, like so many other families, are really concerned around rent and other utility bills. And I remember seeing last week on Facebook, City Council Member Andre Gonzalez, you know, through video and a selfie cam saying, we're Americans, not Americans. Our mayor of Bakersfield, Mayor Go, you know, really assured people that during times of challenge, Bakersfield does what Bakersfield does best, which is care for one another. And I think it's been really nice to see those messages. I think it was also great seeing Assemblymember Rudy Salas and Leticia Perez distributing food boxes last week to needy community members. All of these messages and affirmations are really appreciated and really encouraging. However, I think what is needed right now is action and policy change, because we've seen so many county and local city leaders step up all across California, and yet we haven't seen that same action happen here in Kern County and in many other Valley communities and counties. And so I would like to call on all of our local leaders to implement a moratorium on all evictions and foreclosures for all residents facing financial hardship as a result of the coronavirus, to extend this moratorium to commercial evictions for small and medium-sized businesses that are unable to pay their rent as a result of COVID-19, and to freeze all utility sanitation cutoffs as a result of non-payment during this declared emergency. And that would include water as well as garbage or really any services that cities or counties are providing to residents. And finally, for those at the state level, to extend unemployment insurance and coverage and benefits to undocumented workers in California, who many of them are essential workers working out in the field, working out in many critical industries right now that literally put our food on the table. And it's just a moral outrage that they themselves are not eligible for unemployment insurance and other benefits, which they should be eligible for. Gavin Newsom cited an executive order that would allow local city governments and counties to do the first three of these things. And we've seen places like San Jose, LA, Fresno take the lead and take action on these issues, even having emergency meetings. But we're still missing that here in Kern County, and we're still missing that in so many Central Valley communities. And I think if we don't act now, we can see an unprecedented growth in our homelessness at a time in which we're in this global crisis. And so I think in the future, people aren't going to remember these words of affirmation that have been on Facebook, but what they will remember are those leaders who fought to keep people in their homes and allowed them to thrive and survive during this crisis.
This is Lee Herrick.
And this is Lisa Herrick.
And we were asked to talk a little bit about how we're doing. And so I can say we're doing okay. You know, this is an incredibly difficult and stressful an unprecedented time, so we're doing the best we can. We are definitely sheltering in place. We're going only to the store if it's absolutely necessary and taking care of other essential needs, but for the most part, we're staying at home. Our daughter is at home, and so we're trying to keep her going with her school. I'm a professor, so I've been in communication with my students, and we're just trying to hang in there. Lisa also works, and she could talk a little bit about that.
So I work as the media specialist for the Fresno Arts Council, which covers the entire Fresno County area. And one of the greatest, you know, challenges we have right now is how do we get our community to still stay together during this crisis? And what I'm finding is that the community is stepping up. It's very uplifting that artists are reaching out to us saying, I want to do this. How can I help? How can we help our artists and our arts organizations stay? And that's really just so wonderful. It gives me joy. One of the great things that I've really enjoyed during this shelter at home period is actually looking out the window and seeing the blue sky, enjoying the sunshine. Our neighbors' kids are playing in the cul-de-sac, keeping social distancing, definitely staying more than 6 feet apart. But, you know, they're laughing, they had a great time. It's really uplifting to see our community again during this really, really tense period. But I do have a lot of optimism in the global medical community racing against the clock to find vaccines and treatments that work. So I greatly applaud our front lines. My brother and my sister are doctors and nurses. And it might be a while before I see them again, but I know that they're doing their best, and I hope that we all can do our best for them.
Yeah, absolutely. The doctors and nurses, anyone in a leadership position, people who are working jobs and looking out for people and neighbors and people looking out for one another. And yeah, so that's how we're doing. We send our good wishes to everybody in Fresno and Fresno County and throughout the country and the world.
If you'd like to share a story about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting you, let us know. Record a voice memo on your phone and send it to talk@kvpr.org. You can also just write us an email. You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. As you've just heard from our audio postcards, many of us are settling into life at home as a shelter-in-place directive continues. But what if home is a shelter? Earlier this week, I spoke to Letitia Slaughter. She currently lives at the Fresno Rescue Mission with her two children. She told me how they are finding hope in this turbulent time. Tell me about yourself and the current housing situation that you're in.
Okay. I'm a single mom raising two children, one 14 years old and another two. I am a writer. I was inspired to write my own book while being in this homeless situation. We have been here at the Fresno Rescue Mission for about 3 months now, and I'm focused on the health and safety of me and my two children.
Tell me what it's like living in a shelter given the spread of COVID-19. What steps are being taken to protect you from and your family from this virus?
Well, they have hand washing, antibacterial soap, and they have us isolated by choice if we want to. But we're still around all the families and the children, and we're eating off of the same plate and things like that. And the food has actually gotten me and my children at times sick as well, where we have actually gotten food poisoning. So they have to work on the food options and things. They haven't really caught up with us all being together in one right now. So they have to catch up with everything going on.
So you're all basically locked in together, but staff is coming in and out?
Yes, exactly. Staff is still coming in and out, but we're all the families, the mothers with the children, yes, are locked out.
So how safe do you feel?
I really don't feel safe at all, Kathleen. I don't. Even when we were going out, I never felt safe in this neighborhood. There's no security. Now there's cameras, but that only does so much. That's monitoring us. But they're not always, I'm sure, by the cameras. I know they have tablets, but I still don't feel that safe being in this environment. I really don't.
Tell me about your kids. How are they coping? How are they spending their time?
Well, I'm teaching them to use their imagination right now because my son doesn't have access to educational materials, and I have a two-year-old that gets bored easily as well. So I'm just teaching them just to have fun, to laugh through all this going on. There's a lot of things that we have to have caution about, a lot of fear going out in the world. I'm trying to basically tell them to spread more love, because when we have so much fear in this world, we can create more fear, stress, and depression within us. And as co-creators, I feel like we need to create more love so that we can come together in fellowship as one, especially during these times right now. Like I was telling you, Kathleen, I lost my mom already, so I'm going through something emotionally already. I know people out there right now might be going through something, cancer or anything else in their lives. So I just feel like with everything on top of the coronavirus, we need to come together in peace and harmony and just laugh sometimes.
I'm really sorry to hear about the loss of your mom. When did she pass away?
She passed away a year ago, and that's when all of this has happened for me and my kids with the homeless situation. And emotionally, I still feel dead inside sometimes. So on top of this situation, I've had to really de-stress and learn how to de-stress every day so that I don't create more stress and bad health problems for me, because I have two children to still raise.
How are you managing to do that in such a stressful time?
I basically have to get up every day and focus on how I start my day. That's what I've learned. When I started my day off complaining, I would be so stressed out. But I start my day off through meditation, de-stressing myself, prayer, and making sure I laugh and help others, you know, even in little ways, like making someone else smile. That's how I have to get through these trying times right now.
It's a good reminder for all of us. Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you. You too, Kathleen, and I wish everyone the best as well.
And that's today's Valley Edition. You can hear all of this and more on our website, kvpr.org. You can also download the podcast and find us on Twitter and Facebook. We've got an app. It's called KVPR. The show is produced by our news team, including Alice Daniel, Carrie Klein, Laura Satsui, and Mari Bolaños. Technical support from Marv Allen and Don Weaver. I'm your host, Kathleen Schock. This has been Valley Edition. Thanks for listening.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, accepting nominations now for the 2021 James Irvine Leadership Awards at irvine.org. The California Endowment. Health happens when Californians value schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendowed.org. And by the California Healthcare Foundation, standing with all Californians as we address the coronavirus emergency together on the web at chcf.org.